Hi, welcome to The Pipeline, all things CD and DevOps podcast by the CD Foundation. I am Jacqueline Salinas, Director of Ecosystem and Community Development for the CDF. Thanks for joining us today for episode 17. We are joined by Alex Jones. He is a CDF and DevOps Institute ambassador. Alex spends most of his time as a contributor and end user of cloud-native technology, but he also is into translating tooling, practices, and behaviors into generators of strategic value and positive cultural change. Today's episode, Leveraging Continuous Delivery to Improve Developer Experience, we are going to be talking about how in large organizations, Conway's Law often holds true, and there are many small communities creating competing fragmented developer experiences. In this episode, Alex will answer questions that reflect on successful strategies for scaling delivery and some of the common challenges faced across the industry. Welcome, Alex, to The Pipeline. This is episode 17, and today we are going to be talking about leveraging continuous delivery to improve the developer experience. But before we dive into this topic, we like to start off The Pipeline with an icebreaker. So if you'd like to tell us about your DevOps journey, this is your opportunity to shine.
No pressure then. Thanks, Jesse. I think the easiest way to quantify my DevOps journey is to go in reverse, right? From where we are now, doing a lot of cloud architecture and working with teams to solve problems by implementing SRE practices, to looking back where I was maybe 5-6 years ago. And I think that like many people who are now DevOps practitioners, they came from somewhere else. They're usually nomads who have come from being a stray sysadmin or somebody who likes to hold the glue together at an organization. And I was in that kind of situation. I used to work at B-Sky B, and they're a big broadcaster, part of the Fox family here in the UK. And, you know, I found myself working a lot within the continuous integration space. And that actually translated into hardware, right? So we'd end up using things like MicroSAN arrays. We'd have Blade servers. We'd then have on top of that Mesosphere. And Mesos, you know, being a real competitor to Kubernetes at the time, got me into this whole race to virtualize to the extreme. And it really got me interested in how we measure this stuff. And so naturally, over the next sort of 3 or 4 years, I got heavily involved in some of the projects, such as, you know, Zabbix, leading on to things like Prometheus and other telemetry and observability systems, to eventually really embrace this whole idea of DevOps being not just a sysadmin in a corner, but actually being a community of practitioners who want to bring that shift left. So really, my journey has been extremely organic, and I'm very delighted to be able to be here today to say that I work a lot in the cloud space, implementing many CNCF sort of philosophies within enterprise organizations to some really good successes. So what we've done recently is to look at, you know, projects such as Kate, such as Prometheus, as I mentioned, even the more incubated projects such as Falco, and also, you know, CDF projects we use heavily, such as Jenkins, and just really being able to try and create a reciprocal relationship with enterprise organizations, not just taking, but also reciprocating back into the wider open source community. So yeah, that's kind of in a nutshell where I've come from and what I'm doing today.
Thank you. You are also a DevOps Institute ambassador, as well as a CDF ambassador, which is how we know each other. But when was the first time you contributed to open source?
I think approximately 7.5, going on 8 years ago. I always thought it was a rite of passage to go through the Linux kernel route. I think at the time it might have been for people who were sort of that pre-era of CNCF projects. But the Linux kernel has many of the contributory projects under its umbrella. And one of my first opportunities was to work with an engineer in my organization back at B-Sky B, who helped guide my hand and to help me to make some really minor fix. And so that was quite exciting to see something go into the kernel and be able to then see, you know, that then roll up into an update. So that was many moons ago, but ever since I kind of got the bug for it and I've been doing little bits and pieces here and there since that day.
Very cool. Thank you, Alex. Okay, so now as we transition over to our core topic for today, How would you describe the relationship between continuous delivery and the developer experience?
Yeah, so I think this is a really, it's a weird question, but an interesting one, right? Because you think these two kind of things are orthogonal. It's almost like, you know, comparing apples to cars kind of thing, right? But actually, I think for many of us, the developer experience we have with CI/CD and continuous delivery as a process is a collection of tabs on our browser, right? Many of us think, you know what, I've got to go through this whole rigmarole of releasing something into the production environment. I've got to click tab 1, 2, and 3, and that takes me through Jenkins to Artifactory to some other component in our system. And I think this kind of metaphorical gate process that we go through is very common. You know, whether you're working in a startup or a large enterprise, there is a whole bunch of stuff that you've got to do before you can get things out there. And I think that there are many examples where we lack that kind of interoperability of tooling, and it creates this custom sort of cottage industry, right? So at large companies, you'll get a couple of folks who maybe have had a problem where they want to pull a Docker image down after they've built it in Jenkins and deploy it to some XYZ location. And there'll be, you know, scripts floating around. There'll be all these ways that people sort of back channel this and say, oh yeah, hey, you're the guy that got this proxy working. And so there's this sort of tribal knowledge that exists. And to me, this is a terrible DX, right? Because you can't just pick up and play. You've got to know that that internal metaphor of the business and how to actually make things work. And I think that when we start to ask ourselves, you know, how do we measure some sort of relationship between these two principles, we need to think that, well, first and foremost, if we look at what makes a bad DX, such as I've just mentioned, where you've got many clicks, many tabs, many disparate systems, we can sort of think about how would you do the inverse? And that's to really make what you call a pit of success, right? So that developers can find software getting into the wild is easy, right? And how do you make it easy? And that's something where it becomes simple to understand, ironing out the kinks between the interoperability, the process faults, and all the manual activities. And so really, the way I would describe that relationship is that they're intrinsically bound in that good DX leads to faster continuous delivery cycles and vice versa. Bad DX really does protract that process.
What strategies have you seen utilize CI/CD to improve developer experience?
So I spoke a little bit about there being this correlation between highly delightful DX and shorter delivery cycles. And when we look at why that is, we can break it down into there are three primary catalysts for this. And I'll just say this as a precursor to the primary answer here. And so really, delightful developer experience, I think, compels engineers to utilize the CI/CD more as their workflow, right? And that's a central tenet to this. You want to make the CI/CD the go-to for developers, not an afterthought, not an encumbrance. The more developer centric each component within that CD process is, the more likely they'll be to embrace it. That's a given, right? If something's easy to use, you like using it, you'll go back to use it. And this leads to an outcome that there's more utilization per engineering cycle. And that creates this process where you then have earlier testing, there's less unplanned work, there's lower change fail rate. And as per the sort of the Accelerate Science of DevOps book, you get this virtuous cycle where you're starting to increase productivity off the bat. And again, you then have developer experience as a fulcrum of the CI/CD objective, which places a heavy emphasis on interoperability and integrations. And these are key enablers for these delivery pipelines. So how would you strategically implement those observations as well? Often CI/CD will be where internal business metaphors are pipelined into a set of process activities. Now, what do I mean by that? That essentially means that you have many different departments within a central enterprise CI/CD who are trying to create pipelines to deliver into production. And this will often create a heterogeneous environment, right? You'll have pipelines that are perhaps named differently. You have 200 pipelines for this team and 3 for this team, right? There'll be an inequality. There won't be any sort of an equity between those teams. In terms of resources, that's the same as well. So in a large company, when you really scale that up and you really think, you know, you've got thousands of teams running thousands of pipelines through, let's say, Jenkins that's scaled out in HA, we need to think about how can we create a way of improving that DX, not only at the individual level, but holistically across the team. And DX here also can be a non-functional observation of, you know, latency. You know, that's a key factor in developer experience. It's not just about having something that runs off very simple verbs. It's about every part of that experience. And if I'm waiting for a CI/CD web page to load, that kind of sucks. So there are a few ways that organizations tend to go about this. Federation is a really well-trodden path. Let's say, for example, we're running, you know, GitLab, we're running any number of CI/CDs, it might be Jenkins, as I mentioned earlier, federating them out. So you have something like Jock, you know, the Jenkins Command Center that's running and federating out those Jenkins clusters. That's a really good way of doing it. And you can then create domain-bound context so that each cluster is bound to an organizational unit. Unfortunately, that then really heavily emphasizes Conway's law in that you're separating those clusters. So any reusable pipeline logic has to be shared through repositories. It has to be shared through some other channel because those Jenkins clusters are separated. So that's a real pro and con, is that you do get that kind of separation. But again, you can't really reciprocate knowledge and sort of cross-pollinate knowledge between those clusters. Also, the second approach that you do see quite often with a single enterprise CI/CD is that you can have this thing called view-bound context. And view-bound context is a way to be able to restrict what a user can see within the CI/CD. It's a sort of a blinkers on mode where I might be able to only see my project space or my job space within that CI/CD. And this works pretty well. This also means that you can avoid having to create repositories that are shared as libraries, because you can then use the CI/CD directly to utilize other people's pipelines as long as you have that access. But the downside is it creates a level of complexity. So inherently, when you want to then utilize, say, somebody's cool pipeline for pushing a Docker image, you then need access to that pipeline. So the actual access control model becomes a lot more complex. And especially in an enterprise environment, when you're using something like Active Directory backing this, you need to make sure that has an update period, and also that you're able to delete users, you can change users when they move across the organization. So there's an overhead there as well. And then you have the third option, which is to create atomic delivery pipelines. So that essentially means you have team-level clusters or team-level CI/CD where they have their own continuous delivery pipeline. They could have a small instance, they could have a few cobbled together services that eventually will then push out to a centralized data plane for orchestration for the entire company. Now, these are really great because you can customize them at a team level. Let's say I have a team of 200 or 300 people, or we're a small startup and we have 3 or 4 teams. That's great because we could each run our own preferred tooling. The only problem is that you then all arrive at the same juncture, which is how do we then get this into the centralized sort of orchestration system? Even if you use separate clusters, you know, one might be running Nomad, one might be running Kubernetes, you will eventually all have to have some shared logic, whether that's the ingress, the controllers, the firewall rules. And therefore, again, you do have to have this kind of replication, or you at least need a horizontal API across all of these planes. So there are a few ways to go about that in terms of reducing CI/CD complexity. But overall, there is another way that you can reduce noise that is a little bit simpler than having to go very heavy-handed into physical infrastructure space. In addition to actual workloads, there are ways to simplify the UX experience. If we start back with that idea of a single enterprise-level cluster with RBAC controlling what you can and can't see, having SSO is a really simple way to improve that experience, making it so that when I hit rcicd dot my fictitious company, I have a really simple domain name, and that logs me straight in with my Google credentials, my Okta credentials, whatever that might be, and you have that flow so that whether I'm a project manager, an engineer, or a tester, I have immediately access to my cluster. And so these are really important hallmarks of good DX, where you have that smooth transition. Now, in terms of what we've discussed and where the real innovation is going, there's a lot being done in the REST API space for CI/CD, especially with Jenkins plugins and modules. And I mentioned Jenkins quite heavily here because it's one of the tools that we use a lot. But again, there are other CI/CD solutions that I'll mention a little later on that allow for this level of integration. And when I talk about REST API, what I mean is how can we use the API to declaratively bootstrap the CI/CD so that teams are enabled to almost give a white glove service when we onboard a new team. And if you think about that at a company, when you bring on, let's say, a cool new feature team to a small company and they're building out a new part of the product portfolio, they want to be able to get up and running as quickly as possible, right? And so it is possible now with utilization of REST API to, within GitLab, for example, create pipelines out of the box, right? You can link them to a Kubernetes cluster. You can put all the credentials in there, all the secrets. And so, as I said, that kind of white-gloved approach means that teams can get up and running, start solving problems, and not have to worry about CI/CD configuration. And again, to take that a step further, if you think about engineers who are working on their local machines, being able to have CLI is really then the next step to be able to interface with that CI/CD from a user level so that they can start and trigger jobs as part of their own internal workflow. As an engineer, I use Vim, right? And so I might want to create a Vim shortcut where I can just do something like :TT, and then suddenly it will go and deploy or build a job.
Thank you. Alex, besides helping developers get up and running quickly, why should companies care about the developer experience?
So developer experience is a real zeitgeist right now. You'll hear a lot of people talking about it. You'll hear that it's often being used as a barometer for how well you've enabled engineers to be productive. It's a lead indicator for developer happiness. And there are numerous studies that are publicly available that I should go on to cite later on. If I'm better prepared, I apologize, that do actually ascertain that it's a highly contributing factor in why engineers work at organizations. You'll hear anecdotally from friends, yeah, I like working here, but the stack kind of sucks and they're restrictive. So again, developer experience is a really good grassroots way of indicating whether or not you've hit the right kind of tone with your developer culture. Developer experience also spurs organic contributions. And this is where it starts to get interesting. If you have, as I said at the beginning, this kind of underground black market of people sharing shell scripts that deploy to XYZ or can utilize an API to request a firewall rule, well, you can then start to formalize those things into perhaps guilds or into tribes where people interested in interacting with, say, the security firewall system can say, let's build a Rust library or a Golang library. And suddenly you've got this really cool little organic inner source ecosystem within your company. And then it doesn't matter if you're a company of 10 people or a company of 10,000, the same premise is behind it in that you've got people who care about this stuff and they're building it to solve a problem. Often when you try and dedicate product resources and engineering resources towards make the DX better for our engineers to deploy out to the wild, they'll miss the mark by a million miles because they're looking at it from the wrong perspective. It's a top-down edict where they will try to drive an outcome of, it's easier to deploy, but they're measuring the wrong things, right? Just because something takes less time doesn't make it easier. It could be that they've automated part of the process, but it's a real pig to work with. So again, I think that having this grassroots approach is super interesting because you've got this kind of natural thought process that comes through engineers' minds. If they're kind of enabled and feel safe to do so, they can be like, right, should we wrap something to throw a library? Okay, let's get some cycles to make it run a bit better. And then maybe we can open source it, right? So that's the sort of end result, is that you're breaking down the walls between the inner and the open source community. And so I think that developer experience is really the gateway to caring about the entire developer community, whether or not they're in your own company or not. And I think lastly, just to end, I think that developer experience really does act as a divining rod for the wider business to see the pain points of their engineer persona colleagues. It puts context around day-to-day activities that are often quite hard to describe, and it creates the conversation. You know, I've seen on many Slack channels in various companies, you'll have people say, okay, we care about DX. Well, I can tell you all that this thing sucks, or this thing's really difficult to work with. And you'll get people who contribute, who are maybe senior managers who want to talk about it and say, well, you know, we're doing some innovation here. And it just opens up those boundaries, and it starts to get conversation flowing. And it means that you can actually start taking the anecdotal side of things and generating statistical data to show that by talking about this, we've actually put some numbers against it, and we can start to improve it to make everybody's lives better and to actually make the company more effective.
Thank you. That's a really great perspective. From your point of view, how do you see this landscape changing in the next 5 years?
I think there are three really important things that are going to happen. The first one has already started happening. We have the emergence of GitOps and machine learning. GitOps, some people argue, has been around 20, 30 years, but as we know it today, GitOps in the cloud native world is very much centered around having an ideal state represented from a repository and then deployed out into a cluster, you know, usually on Kubernetes we're talking about these days. What's interesting about that is there is also another perspective there, in that GitOps can be something like an operator in a cluster watching a repository. And as you make changes to a repository, it could be combining machine learning with that GitOps state watching to say that when you've changed a particular file, it needs to rebuild the Docker image or it needs to run the NPM test. Having the intelligence to have a data set and training data available to understand these are what developers need or they're what they want you to do when they commit to this repository. And to give some sort of real world examples, I have some very simple GitHub actions. And again, as many engineering organizations are adopting actions by GitHub, there are some interesting things coming out of that where you can build marketplace tools and back those with your own services in the cloud. And so one of these tools I've been looking at is how do you start to measure what you do the most in a repository? Is that commits to the code? Is that building and testing? Or is that something else like static analysis and pruning? And so the combination of GitOps and machine learning means that we could potentially see something like auto DevOps taking to the next level, which means when you create that repository, it then creates those pipelines. Like I was saying earlier with REST API generating seed jobs, you could have that taken a step further where you have an automatic creation of pipelines, but then a step further, automatic creations of pipelines and monitoring, liveliness probes, readiness probes. It should be able to read the Docker file's expose port. It should be able to read what the code is doing and understand at a rudimentary level, if you're running an HTTP server, it can create a liveliness probe in the Kubernetes template. And I very much think we'll be there perhaps in a year and a half, if not 5 years. But this is definitely where that first principle is going. So the second one, I think, that is also incredibly important, I spoke a little bit about in terms of its cultural impact, is this idea of grassroots CLIs. I think that CLI in enterprise organizations in particular are going to be really important because they start to create abstractions away from complex and legacy business logic into quite neat and verb-based approaches to getting stuff done, you know, create this resource, delete this resource, et cetera, et cetera. And they can be quite modular efforts in the sense that you could have a very dumb CLI terminal and you could back it with a bunch of languages. You could even have different languages, so on and so forth. But the idea here is that you're abstracting away all of that governance and regulatory scary stuff from getting your pod or your bit of code, your server into production, and that's all done on the behind the scenes. And I think there'll be an increased amount of productization behind internal tooling, such as CLIs, in the next few years that we'll start to see those bleed back out into the open source community. There are very active participants in this community already. I think of Uber as well, who have had a lot of important libraries released off the back of their internal efforts with trying to create better developer tooling. So I think that's a really important space to watch. And I think lastly, what we're going to see is monitoring is going to be nothing like we see it today. It'll be intrinsically tied to build pipelines. At the moment, when I build something, you know, regardless of what build system I'm using, CircleCI, whatever it might be, I have a shell script. It says, does this thing deploy? Or I run a kubectl deploy, whatever it might be, and I wait. And it's very clunky, it's very disconnected. And I then read the exit code or I do something else that's kind of dumb. And I look at has the pod been created? I think this is all going to change. We will see monitoring, and I mean real monitoring in terms of telemetry, tracing, that'll all be aggregated with the build data to create a holistic picture in dashboards. And these dashboards will be created when you create your repository. There are some tools that do some of this stuff in a very rudimentary sense, but we'll see this a lot more prevalent throughout all of the sort of continuous delivery tooling offerings. And it will be to the point where you get business intelligence so that when I go between one release and another, without having to codify this into Grafana dashboards and to Prometheus or to Influx or whatever the backend might be, you'll start to see that this will automatically change generation, and there'll be permutations on your monitoring that will be predictive based off what you're doing. So these three concepts will all come together to give us that next generation of this landscape.
Thank you so much, Alex, for your time and for your dedication to the community. We really appreciate all your efforts.